Hello, everybody, and welcome to the How to Hide a Dead Body podcast. Appreciate you guys joining us for another episode. This one is sure to be exciting, informational, educational, and practical. Before we begin, if you haven't gotten yourself a copy of Join or Die, Digital Advertising in the Age of Automation, it's a brand new book. I don't know, we've sold about a billion copies or something. We lost count at the 300 million mark. It's available in hardcover, softcover, digital, ebook, soon audiobook, written by Patrick Gilbert, our executive director, and it's forwarded by myself and David Sable. Definitely check it out, available on Amazon. It's a masterclass in digital advertising, and you'll definitely come away with some practical advice and techniques for increasing the profitability of your digital advertising campaigns. Today we have a special guest, Julian Juniman, who we'll give it over to introduce shortly. But Julian, he's a special guest for us. Not only will he be teaching us a lot about tracking Google Data Studio, Google Tag Manager, Google Analytics, and so on. He's a real, real expert. And you could tell when someone's an expert by their educational content. And Julian's all about educational content. It's what he does now full time, teaching people very complicated, difficult to understand concepts and platforms. And he breaks it down in a very easy, simple to understand way. And I'm not just saying that. I have firsthand experience, a lot of it, and so does my entire team, especially across the first few years when we started our agency. We didn't know what the hell we were doing, Google Analytics, Tag Manager, and Julian's resources on YouTube were an absolute lifesaver. Eventually, we came to call him King Julian, because every time we needed help with something, we would go to King Julian on YouTube, and it's great to come full circle here and to have Julian on the podcast. So, Julian, thank you for joining us and for taking the time. Spend a couple minutes just talking about yourself, what you've done. You've ran a couple other businesses, one of which you've sold. You then went into you bought into a data-driven approach in marketing. Walk us through that career path and what led you to where you are today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Isaac. And I'm happy to be here and talking about this journey that I have been going through. So when I started out, I really wanted to do startups after university. And that's when I got a couple of folks together and we started our first business, which didn't turn out that well. So I wouldn't say it's a magnificent buyout that we had there, but I kind of exited that business, and then we started another kind of journey in e-commerce. And
what was the first business?
The first business was actually a site that where we sold cruise trips to people. So it was like a travel site where you had different offers to book cruise trips. And then the second business that we started was right on an e-commerce. We sold high quality home textiles like bed linen and so on here from Germany, all sourced from China. I was not on the side of the sourcing or so on. I was solely looking after the digital marketing efforts, so building up the digital marketing team, doing anything from SEO, PPC, and so on. I found out for myself that data is everything that moves everything in digital marketing. So later when I
What gave you that realization? Like what changed, and what how are you doing things, or how did you see things being done that you would notice something and then you shifted, or like what happened there?
Yeah, sure. I think when we started working on in a team, we really needed to scale our efforts. Obviously, we had also VC money, and that needs to be wisely spent. So you start building these spreadsheets out, and in the end, it all comes down on the PPC side, for example, to buy the customer cheaper than make more money with the customer and buy him cheap in that sense. And so we need to get an ROI on our investment, and that's when this whole approach started, where we were just looking at numbers in the end, right? Even so on the SEO side as well. So when you look at your SEO efforts or on any other efforts when you were looking into display advertising as well. So all we had to clamor to was the data, and that was in the end the powerful thing that let us scale our approach. So I think that's when I really fell in love with the data-driven approach, as I call it. So yeah, I then also when I left that business, I started out on my own, and I said, okay, I know now how this data works, but I really want to also be able to gather it. And that was always the big bottleneck when we were doing this data-driven approach. I started working with clients, but they didn't have that data because they didn't even know how to measure it in the first place. And lo and behold, Google came out with this product called Google Tag Manager, which makes it easier to build in this kind of tracking and use then the full capabilities of tools like Google Analytics, where you don't just install one little tracking code, but actually customize your installation so you get the business data that a business actually needs in order to make decisions. And that's where...
Okay, let's pause here for a moment. Not for an advertisement, but just so I can clarify some questions. Sure. Walk our listeners through Google Analytics, like what that is. What do you mean when you say just a regular, you know, tracking tag? What is a tag? Explain what a tag is. And then what is Google Tag Manager specifically? And give an example or two of how using Google Tag Manager helps customize or make better Google Analytics. Like, how do they work together? Sure. Give a few examples.
Sure. So everybody's familiar with Google Analytics. They have it running on their website. And normally, when you first open up an account with Google Analytics, you need to install a little bit of JavaScript code. And these are these ominous JavaScript codes that need to be placed on all the sites of your website. And these are also referred to as marketing tags. Now, normally, these marketing tags are... you just install one tag for Google Analytics, for example. But once you start ramping up your digital advertising, there might be a tag that you need to install from Google Ads, from Facebook, the Facebook Pixel, from any other marketing platform that is running on your website, because they also need that data to operate. And this is always an approach of taking that code and placing it on the website. Now, if you are not the one who is actually placing the code, you will go over to your developer, to the IT department, to build that in. Obviously, the IT department is not always the most... Well, it's not
fastest,
the most exciting
fastest
thing.
Fastest to respond.
It's not the most exciting thing to place a marketing tag on the website, and therefore Google, as they also rely on that data, came up with this little tool that makes it easier to implement these tags. And Google Tag Manager is basically a tool that you install once on your website, so you still need to install one central snippet, but then through this central user interface, so it's not programming really, it's a user interface that you log into, you can place these tags, and they have all kinds of templates, so you don't have to really actually mess with the code in itself. So it's easy to install these tags and manage them on a central interface. And this makes it easy, obviously, for other companies to come in and also install their tracking if you hire a PPC agency, for example. Now, when I talk about Google Analytics...
Before Tag Manager came out, were there some other tag management platforms already that existed?
Yeah, there were some platforms that existed, like Enciton, for example, Tag Commander, but these were always in the enterprise. So Google Tag Manager and Google, with their power, they made it actually for free, and you can install it on the page, and it's now standard on the site. Yeah.
Okay, but
when it comes to Google Analytics, when I say you install one code, you actually just get one piece of information, and that piece of information is kind of when the user visits the website. And you get information about what the website is, what the URL is, maybe the page title, anything that the tracking code can read by itself. But Google Analytics is actually a platform that you can customize and make more powerful, because Google Analytics doesn't always know what your business is all about. So if you, for example, if you are an e-commerce website, you need to install e-commerce tracking. That's where the first customization, for example, comes in. And with Google Tag Manager, you can actually go in and install these customizations really easily without having to oftentimes, with relative ease, rather than trying to go over to your developer and teach him Google Analytics so he can install it. So you can do this all from Tag Manager itself. So that's where the power of Tag Manager really comes in.
What are a few, you mentioned Facebook and Google Ads. You could talk maybe a little bit more in detail about those two, because those seem to be very common tags or ways to customize Google Tag Manager. What are a few common use cases for Tag Manager? And if you want to talk, you can talk about Facebook, but like, what is that? What does that mean for Facebook? So Facebook is, you said Facebook needs to operate, but what do you mean that they need to operate? Like, what data does Facebook need, and how does that run through Tag Manager?
Right. So first of all, any PPC tool where you spend money on, they oftentimes need, or they need to have some conversion data. If you don't have conversion data, so if the user actually took the action that you wanted him to take on your website, that might be a form submit or a buy of your product, then you cannot optimize your ads because you don't know what works. So that would be the first step that any kind of tool requests to get access to on the thank you page of your online store to send that data over. So the Facebook pixel has a way to send over purchase information. Google Ads has conversion data to send over. We have e-commerce tracking for Google Analytics. But when we actually don't, or when it comes to optimizing even further into the funnel, so steps that lay before the ultimate conversion of the sale, you have maybe the add to cart or the view of the product itself, you have these different codes that you can then customize and install so you actually can track these actions as well. And with Google Tag Manager, you have these ways to not only place a code on all the pages of your website, but one specific page, for example, the thank you page or the product page. You can say to the Facebook pixel, okay, we have viewed a content piece here, and this is the actual content ID of this product. And then you would be able to, for example, show this in retargeting advertising later on Facebook or on Google Ads. So that would be the most common example where you would start customizing your codes.
So let's go back to your story then. So you were learning all about this. Google Tag Manager comes out, and you're still with the e-commerce company?
No, I'm already out on my own helping people to install Google Analytics or getting data for them from Google Analytics and getting insights from Google Analytics. When I realized, okay, we basically need to install Google Analytics correctly first in order to get these insights. So that's when I really dug into installing Google Analytics and using Tag Manager to do so.
Let's walk back a moment. You went out on your own, right? That's a big decision. It didn't sound like after university you worked for a traditional 9-to-5, right? You were sort of always entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
And you had the first company, the cruise ship, you had an exit, then the bedsheet company, and then you went out on your own. What made you, like, how did that decision come about? And at the time, like, you know, what types of outside of work responsibilities did you have? How did those weigh into your decision? And what was that period like for you?
Okay, that's an interesting question, because I actually, back in the day, always remember that I love to travel, and I was in my 20s and wanted to go out in the world again. Now, at the same time, there was this kind of emerging field of, okay, remote work. Now, everybody's talking about remote work nowadays, but 7 years ago, it was not really a big thing. At the same time, I realized, okay, half of my time, or probably full time, I'm sitting in front of a computer and doing digital advertising. I could do this from anywhere in the world. So when I went out on my own, it was not a conscious decision to say, hey, let's be a freelancer here and try to get some clients and build a business out of that. I actually bought a ticket, one-way ticket to Vietnam at that point, and flew over to Vietnam, sat there in a cafe, and tried to figure out this kind of freelancing stuff. But there was also a digital nomad scene where I met up with other entrepreneurs, other Americans from many different countries. They were all trying to figure things out for them. And yeah, I have some really cool friends from back then. And I went into this direction of doing my freelance thing that I built into an educational business. And many others went into other directions like Amazon FBA and so on. So that's like kind of the mindset that I was in back then, and I built this business basically from a cafe in Vietnam.
Wow, incredible! Any big bumps along the road, like as you built yourself up? Did you have a plan for where you wanted to be? Talk about Measure School. Like, how did like what were the services that you were providing? How were you pricing your content? Were you also doing client service? How do you decide what content that should be free as far as lead gen? Walk us through like your strategy for building a content platform that you can get paid for and pay your bills with.
Yeah. So back in Vietnam, it was not really that hard to start working on the stuff because, you don't have that many costs. Let's put it this way. And therefore, when I was starting out as a freelancer, I underpriced myself quite a bit and just tried to get my feet wet. So I went actually on platforms like Upwork and tried to do the $50, $100 jobs and just get my feet wet with analytics implementation. And that actually turned out pretty well. I was at some point the highly rated GTM expert because back then there were no GTM experts out there on Upwork. And I could get many jobs. At the same time, there was a friend of mine who helped people out with this new emerging platform called Udemy, getting courses online. And I thought, well, I don't have anything else to do, or I have a little bit of free time that was not always fully booked. Let me try that out. And that's how I started an educational business, but then also said, I want to do marketing for this. And I started doing a YouTube channel. Now, on the YouTube channel side, it is very important that you stay consistent. And for me, my marketing plan was simply, okay, people will buy my course after they watch a video, and video is kind of like the course. So it's a natural thing to like swap over from YouTube to the course. So I started doing these videos every week, and I have been doing it, well, with a few exceptions, every week for the past 6 years. And that's how it started growing and growing. And I was the only one back then doing content consistently on Google Tag Manager and talking about this very specific digital marketing field, which is tracking and analytics. And that's how I gained a following, apparently, from all over the world. And yeah, that's how it slowly built up. I guess I was also doing some freelancing work on the side, especially at the beginning. I think for the first 2 years, I was still doing some education, some services. But I realized very early on that if I can dedicate more time towards doing more videos or educating people, bringing out courses, I can make this more scalable in the end, right? My plan was never to build an agency, so I kudos to you guys building such a great agency. For me, it's really hard to think about like, okay, I will have these employees and then we are not really in one place at the same time because I was traveling back then as well. So for me, this whole educational business was a really great opportunity. And back then it was not yet as, I guess, prevalent to have a course. Nowadays, a lot of people have courses and you need to stand out as a course creator as well. But back then, video was also my passion. That's why I started doing these videos. And it slowly grew until I came back to Germany 3 years ago. And here I can dedicate more to live streaming, having a complete setup here and building courses more for a community that I have now grown rather than trying to get in every little sale at the beginning, which was more of a hustle at the beginning than it is now, I must say.
So what is your core product now? So it's your courses, and what's the content of those courses, and who's your real target audience?
Right. So we mainly have one product, which is called Measure Masters. It's a membership website. So it's paid on a monthly basis, recurring revenue. And we have as the perfect member, somebody who is a professional marketer that might be in a PPC field, SEO field, working in an agency, or somebody who is working in-house in a business, but is doing this professionally. So they really want to understand their data better and want to know, take ownership of how to build it actually. And nowadays, this is a crucial skill for anybody who's working in digital marketing to actually understand when a client comes in and says, okay, I will do PPC for you, but we need to get the tracking set up. And the client, especially smaller clients, might not have the technical expertise to actually build that in. You can say, install Google Tag Manager for me and we will get it done. And that's where my technical tutorials also focus on. And we help then people to go all the way through the funnel of analytics, which is at the beginning, you measure the data, then you analyze it. So in Google Analytics, you have the tool of Google Analytics, and then you need to make or you need to create change with it. So data is not just laying around and you get great insights from it, but you actually gather it in order to change something in your marketing campaign, on your website, or within an organization. And that's where presentation also comes in. So Google brought out this tool of Google Data Studio, where we also can now take that data from Google Analytics and many other sources and present it to people in a easily consumable dashboard or report.
And so what I find so valuable about the content that you put out, and for anyone else that works in PPC that might be listening to this, I think this is really important. Because the end client, the small business owner, or you know, the stakeholder that's hiring the agency, often doesn't understand the value of proper tracking, and probably won't. Like, they don't care enough to really understand it. And I think that's okay, so long as we do in the middle. We understand that. I think, you know, as your target audience, essentially. And when these things are a problem to set up, it really puts a strain on the relationship. So when we have a new client that comes on board and they say, okay, listen, you know, we're so excited to get started. You know, we've gone through a sales process. They've seen our content. They've seen our case studies, and they want that. They want us to start generating revenue for their business. And we say, well, oh, hang on. We have to set up tracking. We have to make sure, you know, there's a CRM integration, and we want to get, you know, profit calculated in your data layer. And that's all foreign to them. And they're like, okay, what exactly do I need to do here? Sometimes that takes several weeks, even months to set up. And we're saying, look, we can't do the things that we need to be able to, like, we can't do all that fun, sexy stuff until we deal with the really technical development side of the tracking. And if we can't push that through as quickly as possible, there's a serious strain, there's friction in the relationship early on. So that's why I think where you come in to offer this solution is so incredibly valuable, because I'm really, like what Isaac was saying at the beginning is not at all an exaggeration. We don't have an in-house developer here, right? So like we're a lot of marketers that either work with developers that are on the client side, or we've hired a lot of developers. You know, Upwork's been a great place for us for that. But there have been a lot of times where like we're watching one of your videos to figure out how to set up a tag implementation, or how to, you know, integrate Zapier to pull this information into that platform. And it's so simple, and it's really got us out of a jam multiple times where it's like, I have to get on a client call in an hour and I don't know what I'm going to do. Let me go see if Julian has something on the Measure School feed and I'll figure it out. So I really do think that's an interesting, like a really interesting little niche that you found yourself. But what I want to also kind of ask you about is this, the niche specifically. So like you found that there was a need originally on Upwork for people, no one knew how to install Google Tag Manager. So you were the first one to really go and do that. Then it's like, okay, well now there's people that need to learn about this. I'm going to create content. So it's not necessarily that your niche is YouTube or that your niche is Udemy. I think your niche is that like you found something that is really valuable to folks like us, but there's not a ton of people like us. So as you've continued to develop your business over the years, how have you really thought about, really you were like one step ahead of the next guy that's doing it, I think. So how have you continued to think about where you need to go to make sure that you stay relevant and sharp as the entire industry has changed?
Yeah, I think there is an archetype here of a technical marketer, and there's a myth of that marketers don't have to be technical, right? We are working with a technical product in the end, so you can't do Google Ads without installing the tracking. And I think when we look at data that we analyze and make decisions upon, we also need to kind of know how that data came about and how it's been tracked, so we also see the faulty thing inside of the data. That's, by the way, also one of the big things when it comes to automation and algorithms, that oftentimes when we talk about the future of Facebook with the tracking preventions that are going on and so on, they will at some point not really tell us, okay, you need to install this data here and there. We will pull that data together and we will be able to then come up with a solution for you in terms of like the the conversion. So data, you need to provide that data somehow to the Facebook pixel, to these systems, and you need to know what that data is all about. So in terms of the future, I think, and how I kind of try to, or how I kind of try to understand the field that I'm in, is more, I see myself more as a technical marketer to understand, okay, this is the technology. What are they really offering? How is this different from maybe what Google Analytics has to offer, what these other tracking tools have to offer, and how does data play a role in that, and how can we optimize this with data? I think that when we look at these big players, Google and Facebook and so on, they are clearly going into this future of automation. Machine learning is a big thing, and you need to feed the right data to these machine learning algorithms in order to get a proper output, right? And therefore, I think I try to always stay ahead of the curve and think about these principal basics: what is going in, what is coming out.
Very cool. What are some of the most interesting? And I want to talk about iOS 14 and Google's changes to a cookie-less world, and what are Phlox and your take. Before we do that, what are some of the coolest things you've done with Google Tag Manager, like outside of the e-commerce tracking? I've seen you do some really neat stuff. Any fun stories or creative workarounds that you want to share?
Sure. I guess when we think about Google Tag Manager, oftentimes Google Tag Manager itself is a tool that runs on the user's browser. So it's kind of installed on your website and it's executed on the user's browser. Now, oftentimes we can get data that is installed that the browser provides, for example, the URL, the screen size, and so on. But what I'm oftentimes more excited about is to pull actually data out of silos. So if you are able to pull data from, for example, your CRM to Google Tag Manager and then make that usable inside of Google Analytics, that might mean that you can then segment your users based on where the users or what data you have in the CRM itself. So let's say you have data in the CRM about certain attributes of your users, what products they use on your website, or what kind of preferences they have, especially when you're a SaaS business. The user actually logs in, and in that moment, you can identify the user and also pull in data from the CRM, and then you have that available inside of Google Tag Manager. Now, from Google Tag Manager, that data, that identified data, can be sent out to many different tools. So, for example, you could send out data to a tool like Facebook and build a targeted audience of people who have used or viewed a certain website or have a certain attribute in your CRM, and that makes it much more powerful than the normal data that you have inside of your Facebook pixel. That's how you can really build a data advantage, because you have a sophisticated system that is custom to your business, and nobody else has that data available, unless they built the same system, obviously, and they have that same data. So oftentimes, pulling data together can make it so much more powerful, but unfortunately, they're still like in silos in different other entities. So you need to think creatively, and this is where the creative part comes in, really, in tag management or in data management, to pull this data together and make it useful for marketing in the end.
I say this all the time, that our clients' first-party data is their most valuable asset. And when you're using these platforms, if it's Facebook, if it's Google, if it's really anyone else, all of your competitors really have access to the same third-party data. Like, if you're bidding on the same keyword in Google and your competitor is bidding on the same keyword, there's no competitive advantage there other than, you know, maybe if your site has a better usability function. So being able to leverage your own data, your first party data, to help optimize more efficiently is the main advantage, is really the only advantage that's left in a world where all these other signals are sort of ubiquitous and able to be tapped into if you just create a Facebook account. But I do think that, like, the real creative solutions, the things that you're describing here, are only able to really be unlocked when marketers and developers can speak the same language. So I think what you just described is something that a traditional marketer wouldn't really ever be able to think of on their own because they don't know enough about the data. But a developer or a tagging expert would never really bring that idea to a marketer because they're not thinking like a marketer. That's not really what their job is. So do you have any recommendations or resources for how marketers could learn more about the development space and vice versa so that more of these conversations inside of organizations could take place?
Right. I think that there are many resources out there to learn more about the development space, especially on the programming side. But we as marketers don't actually need to know how to build a very sophisticated kind of website or app. But what we should all be aware of, especially if we're working on technologies like a website, we should acknowledge that there are technologies running on the website that are easily understood. We don't need to be expert in it and build them out, but we should understand how a web request actually works, what gets downloaded, how HTML, CSS, and JavaScript actually works. And then if we want, we can dive deeper into some of these concepts. So I find it very, and this is what I've learned over the years. I'm not a developer, but I've learned JavaScript through my tagging work. So in Google Tag Manager is basically just a JavaScript injection library. So through Google Tag Manager, I've learned how this kind of works in terms of like if statements and what the output would be and so on. And that all helps me in the end to talk more clearly to a developer, because a developer understands these kind of concepts of, okay, we don't want to fire something here, but we want to fire something here. We want to have this output. And as long as you kind of understand how he's thinking, that will help you later on in terms of the understanding or getting rid of this friction between the developer and the marketing team. And I think there are many resources out there. You don't have to learn to program, but at least learn how what you're working here about the website, about web development, and learn a little bit about how these processes within a development company maybe works. Right? So how tasks are actually written, and then how normally you would debug something. So the phrase, for example, and I with tagging, this comes up a lot, right? If somebody says my tracking doesn't work, this doesn't help me as somebody who knows tracking quite well. I would need to know, okay, why doesn't it work, and how do you see that it doesn't work, right? What are the tools actually to see where your tracking goes wrong? And if you can describe the output and says, I click on this button, but the data doesn't arrive in Google Analytics, I, as the tagging expert, can go in and tell you, okay, we need to check these three points in order to find and debug this problem. And this is kind of like what a developer would do if you have a app problem in your app or in your website. You need to kind of have the way to replicate the problem in order to, otherwise it's not there for the developer, it's not there because they have no way of replicating and showing this kind of error again. So that's kind of the way to, I think, to going in and getting more used to speaking to developers. And don't shy away from speaking to developers. That's also a very important point. So oftentimes people come up with these weird workaround and hacks, and that's very dangerous oftentimes when it comes to marketing deployment and also data in the end.
I love the Google Tag Manager preview and debug tool. It's so much fun. Yes. Like, you know, you're clicking, you're fixing it, and then it gives you like this immediate feedback if you've discovered a solution, you know, because you could see the data layer and you know what, you know, it's fun.
There's also the Chrome developer tools. Like, for me, a big revelation, it's like looking under the hood of a car, right? You just need to know this, or you need to know how to open it up, and then you can see all this data. You can see the HTML, you can see the requests coming through, and this is all valuable information to later on, if there's a bug, seeing, oh, I actually see a JavaScript error there. That's a huge thing for the developer. Another piece of information in the puzzle of solving an issue.
Talk to us a little bit about iOS 14. I think performance advertisers are still scrambling to figure out what it means exactly for their campaigns. If people are running campaigns on Facebook, you know, most significantly, what updates Facebook is making in response to iOS 14, and how does Google's recent announcement that they're going to be moving away from keywords. Away from cookies. How does it play into this? Is it part of it? Is it separate? You know, try to maybe unravel some of the mystery a little bit for us.
Okay. I will not talk too much about the technical details. I guess you had an episode about this, and I think it's very comprehensive. And in the end, there's always something changing. So anytime I will say something in 2 weeks, it'll probably be outdated. But the big picture stuff is that the iOS update is rolling out on app devices, right? The impact is definitely there for advertisers, but first and foremost for those who are building apps, because these people will not be able to take data that is measured in their apps and maybe give it to other advertisers. So the advertising pool will probably be diminished, at least on iOS apps there, because of this little pop-up that comes up and if you want to be tracked or not.
Now, if I could just break that down to even a simpler level, as an example, let's say, here's an app on my phone. I have Zillow, okay, the Zillow app, let's just say, for example. So when I open up Zillow and I start typing in my zip code and I look at certain houses with 4+ bathrooms, and Zillow eventually learns that I like copper trim above my stove, this is information that allows them to place highly targeted ads for which advertisers will bid more, because I sell gold doorknobs, and I can now target on Zillow a customer who likes gold trim in their house. And that's sort of how things have worked, because Zillow's collecting information about my sessions in the app, and they're selling it in a way, or they're at least making it accessible to other ad networks that then allow advertisers to monetize that nuanced data. Now, if Zillow, and I'm correct me if I'm wrong, this is how I think about it. Now, if Zillow is no longer able to access the details of my session, they don't necessarily see or they could sell or make accessible which homes I'm looking at, which zip codes I'm typing in, the values of the homes that I'm browsing, whether I'm in the rental market or the buying market, then they could still show ads in their app. But those ads won't be as effective because they're not as targeted, and advertisers won't bid as much on a CPM basis for those placements because the conversion rates are going to go down. Is that a good way of describing it, or am I missing something?
Yeah, I think that's one side of the equation. Obviously, if you can log into Zillow and search for houses, Zillow will still have that data. The end product is, especially for smaller apps that are, for example, on an advertising basis, like games that are completely monetized through advertising, they won't be able to show any personalized data or any personalized ads anymore, because they cannot give out that data and say, okay, this user who's visiting this game right now, I re-recognize him from somewhere else. He was on Zillow before, right? So these advertisers or these apps will probably saying, okay, if I can't make money with this anymore, I will probably just slap on $5 and put it in the app store. And that obviously then is good for the app store, because they take 30%, or for Apple, they take 30% cut. But this is just one coin of the equation here, because in the end, the data is kind of diminished, right? The data pool probably is less, and therefore also Facebook and Google Ads now or Google have reacted, and they're changing kind of how attribution and how this kind of advertising works. That said, if your clients mainly are on websites, then they don't have to worry about the first impact of like the ads needing to change their tracking in their website, because that is mainly concerning the app universe, right? Now, as a big picture, as a marketer, how I see this whole thing is like, yes, Facebook has reacted pretty strongly, and they have changed around some of the ways to actually track users, but then also some configurations. In the end, when I look at their advertising system, it's more black box now. So they want to do this aggregate event measurement where they pull in data and they will tell you if somebody converted or not. But you don't really know what's going on in the background, what the algorithm there does. as a big picture, again, I don't tend to freak out as much. A lot of people right now are asking me, how do I need to react? What do I need to do? Should I install server-side tracking? Should I install this? In the end, we don't know. The only thing that we would know is that the data probably will not be as perfect anymore, as it was never perfect, as before. The quality is probably going down a bit. And in the end, what we can only do is look at our data and look at our marketing and see if it's still working, if we're still getting the same conversions, or if any of these parameters are changing so that we need to adjust our marketing. And this is what we do anyways all the time, right? I don't see, and this is something I cannot predict, is like a huge shift in like, yeah, retargeting won't work anymore because iOS was introduced. No, probably the data will be a little bit diminished, but it will still work fine and your retargeting audiences will still be filled and Facebook will still find your audiences. Because in Facebook, for example, you need to be logged into Facebook, right? So they will still be able to show their personalized ads on the Facebook feed, just like they did before. But the whole ecosystem will probably have less data available to really target their users more completely. So that's how I think about it. I tend to not freak out about it and tell everybody like, yeah, let's just chill and see how it works out. Obviously, it's not a preferable move for us marketers because we get less data, but it's something we have to deal with. It's like the changing weather, or when you get older, you also have to deal with that. It's not something that is unpredictable here. It's something that is coming with the industry, and we need to get used to it. It's the same thing with privacy changes here in Europe and the US. There will also be privacy changes over the years. And with cookieless future, it's just something we need to like kind of deal with. That's the big thing.
As a content creator, does something like this excite you because there's so much that you can kind of make out of this? Or to a level, does it stress you out and be like, oh my God, I have no idea what any of this stuff even means. Now I have to learn about it. And then, you know, your audience is expecting you to, one, have an opinion on it all, but also to teach them, and they want it yesterday and you're still trying to figure it out. So like, what is it like for you sitting in the middle of all of this?
Yeah, it's more the latter. It stresses me out sometimes, because oftentimes when you create content, you obviously want to have evergreen content, something that lasts forever. And with technology, when you're teaching people technology, it changes all the time. The problem is that the education sometimes lags behind what is actually happening. So we all know that also our digital marketing field, especially when it comes to tracking, especially when it comes to Facebook ads, is not always the cleanest industry. So there are 16-year-old guys on Facebook teaching others how to make $1 million online through Facebook ads. And now they are saying, oh, iOS will change everything and this will be the big thing. And now they're coming to me and saying, like, Will, what should I do? You're the tracking expert. So for me, it's always a challenge to tell people, okay, let's go back to the basics. You are getting probably less data here, and now we need to work with that data, but nothing will dramatically change. You will still have that data available. Maybe there will be a few more sessions that are unidentified. Maybe you won't get all the sources in. But anyways, the analytics is about the trends. It's not about the absolute numbers that you see in there. So for me, the struggle is really rather to pull people back and tell them, okay, let's look at the fundamentals here. And yes, the tracking techniques will change. And what excites me about this is that there's new technologies coming out, right? So when I do technology training, I love Google Tag Manager. And yeah, Google Tag Manager didn't exist 10 years out now, but 20 years ago, the internet didn't exist in the form that we have it now, right? With mobile devices and so on. So there's constant change there, and there will be change again when it comes to new tracking, when it comes to a cookieless future, right? What will this look like? Flock and so on. All these concepts that are now coming out, people want to know exactly what does it mean, but there's nothing to really explain to them because we don't quite know yet how it will turn out. And Google is kind of testing this. They want to come out with this. They're having some resistance there, but it will be a process. So we need to look at this as a news fact and say, okay, this is changing. The landscape is changing, but in terms of like what we do as marketers, we just need to press on and try to make the best out of what we have available here as data points. So that's kind of the thing as an educator.
Incredible. One of my colleagues here wanted me to ask you about how do you decide which content that you're going to make? How do you choose a topic? And also, are you thinking about any way to take open suggestions? Because we have a long list of things that we'd love for you to dive into.
Well, on the content side, it's pretty much not yet too standardized, I would say. It's always like what I'm currently working on, what I'm interested in, and I put out this content. Obviously, I know now what content kind of works well. When we have like content suggestions, I do definitely do take content suggestions in the paid membership, because for us it's like, okay, I need to give the members what they want. On the YouTube side, it's oftentimes people say, hey, I want to have a iOS tracking tutorial, right? And oftentimes there I find that people are not yet as educated enough. They just want to know the quick tips of like how to install app tracking, although it's a vast topic that you can do in so many different ways, and you have so many different possibilities and mechanisms to do it. So I always like say thank you for your suggestion, but I then don't do a video out of it, just because I know that it wouldn't do well, as I don't give people what they want, which is like a really quick tutorial on how to do implement iOS tracking, for example.
So that's brilliant marketing, because I think it would be easy to just be like, all right, I'm gonna put out like this is what people have been asking for, but it seems like you know your core audience, you know where you're gonna extract the greatest amount of lifetime value out of a customer. And those folks don't want that content because they're educated enough to know that a quick 10-minute video about iOS tracking is not actually going to answer the needs that they have. That's fascinating. That's good by you for figuring that out.
Well, it's also, I mean, if you do content marketing, I would also look at your competition, what they are doing and what is already successful. So maybe I'm gonna shoot myself in the foot with this one, but on YouTube, for example, you can see the views of any video, right? There's nothing preventing you from going to your competitor's YouTube channel and seeing, oh, they have 100,000 views on this particular video, let's do our take on that, right? And especially when somebody is subscribed to you, YouTube results are very highly individualized and personalized. So in the end, they will click on your video because you will rank on top. It's not as on the search engine itself that where somebody types something in and you need to really fight for that position. So me having a lot of subscribers already, I am able to actually look at a channel and say, oh, this guy did really well, although he has only 5,000 subscribers. I take that video and I kind of do my take on that. And that's also a technique to do a successful video, I would say. And the most successful videos are not always the ones that people ask for, right? Because when people have suggestions in the comments, it's oftentimes more what interests them, but not what will do well on YouTube.
Yeah, I think probably half of the views on your tutorial on how to fire an event, a Google Analytics event on a button click, half those views are probably myself. I've watched that video probably 10,000 times. So, but it's like a random obscure video that just like happened to be very useful for me at several points throughout the last like 5 years.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I this is my best performing video and I redo it every year and there's actually nothing new there for the button click. So I'm like, yeah, I'm now explaining you for the 10th time how to do this. But it tends to do always well because now it's a new year and people click on new videos there. So yeah, that's how I come up with ideas as well.
Isaac, do you have anything else? Because that's all.
No, that's great. Honestly, this was helpful. I like the format here where you gave some practical advice, and it's really interesting to hear about your career trajectory, because we've also been involved in content, and I'm always encouraging people to go out and create high quality content. It's great for other people, it's great for business, it's great to keep you sharp, right? If you didn't have to make a video every week, there's no way you would know as much as you do now about all the different topics that you know. So Well done. And I appreciate the quality of your content. Look, like, even though you were one of the first people talking about GTM, there's only a sliver, like an infinitesimal sliver of content available online that's good, that you could actually watch. And now it's like, oh, now I could do something I couldn't do before. So your stuff is good. You explain it well. I really respect and admire the way you teach. And it was really nice meeting you and having you on the podcast, Julian. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right, everybody, until next time, don't forget to get your copy of Join or Die, Digital Advertising in the Age of Automation on Amazon. Julian, where could our listeners find you online?
Just on measureschool.com or youtube.com/measureschool if they want to check out the YouTube channel.
Got it. That's measureschool.com, youtube.com/measureschool for all of Julian's free and paid content and education. I couldn't recommend it more. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And our last question, as usual, Patrick, where's the best place to hide a dead body?
Second page of Google.
There it is. We'll speak to everybody next week. Thank you.